Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
With us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Department of Sweeping Generalizations. We have been at this department many times.
And, you know, I think that there's a certain wonderfulness about sweeping generalizations, and this is one of them.
Well, you know what? They're so all-encompassing that they remove you from the thought process.
Exactly. And yes. as my wife keeps saying to me, your thinking is too simplistic.
Yeah.
You know, what does she mean by that?
Well, that's a nice way of saying you're a dummy.
Yeah, so what is generalization that you have for us?
This item came to us from Automotive News. Here's the headline. Dealers fume over plaid ads.
Yeah.
Seems that car dealers in the Denver area are up in arms over a new series of TV ads. The ads are for Auto Nation. You know, Auto Nation is one of those automotive superstores.
Yeah.
And they claim to have low-key, non-haggling salespeople. Well, Auto Nation's ads apparently feature a grossly unfair, in the estimation of the other dealers in the Denver area, stereotype. Two fictitious, high-pressure car salesman, you ready for this? In plaid suits.
Suits, not just plaid pants, entire suits. I mean, what? If you're going to do a sweeping generalization, you've got to exaggerate
a
little bit.
Well, we just wanted to say that we think it's very presumptuous to make that kind of a sweeping generalization, to assume that all car salesmen are a high pressure kind of people, and they dress up in silly looking plaid suits. No, we know for a fact that it's mostly just plaid pants that they wear. Not the whole suit. I've never seen anyone in the whole suit. It's mostly just the pants.
I never have. And I think the Denver automobile dealers have every right to be up in arms.
I think so, too.
I do.
If you're up in arms about anything that we've said, or you want to be up in arms, you can call us at 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Kate in Las Vegas.
Kate with a K, of course.
Kate with a K.
So what's going on, Kate?
Well, I have a 1995 red Acura Integra, and it's doing something really quirky.
Mm-hmm.
When it gets to be about 103 or higher, when I stop at red lights, the car will stop, but then my brakes start slipping, and my foot goes closer and closer and closer to hitting the floor, and I have to take my foot off the brake and sort of let the car lurch forward a little, then catch it, and it'll stop, but then it slips again.
And how long has it been doing this?
Only since it started getting really hot.
Which was
February, 1910.
Right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's been about 6 weeks now here.
Yeah, that sounds dangerous, though. I mean, aren't you nervous about this?
Yeah, because, you know, we have lots of traffic here and an awful lot of lights, and they're long, so I'd like to do things.
Well, I mean, how come you didn't bring it somewhere?
Take it
somewhere.
I did, and they tell me I'm crazy.
They told you were crazy?
Pretty much. You know, they didn't say it. They gave me the look.
A crazy?
Oh, yeah? What's the look?
You know, the look where they sort of tilt their head at you and say, well, I'm sure it happens, but we don't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so you weren't sufficiently convincing. What do you do for a living?
I'm a professor.
Of what?
Sociology.
Wow.
Jeez, you should be able to handle this.
You'd think, but I know nothing about cars.
No, but you must know about Neanderthals.
Yeah, I know a lot about people. That's how I knew what the look meant.
Yeah, you know what the look meant.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you have to go back and tell them that you're pretty sure.
You're pretty sure. You're pretty almost positive.
You're almost positive, and uh-huh. You've spoken to people who sound like they know what they're talking
about.
And
they're almost positive, too.
That you need a brake master cylinder.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That sounds expensive.
No.
It's a few hundred bucks.
Oh, that's not so bad.
Yeah, I mean, nothing. If you're in Las Vegas and you're a sociology professor,
one roll of the dice.
You're probably making 12, 15 grand a year.
Yeah, just about that. And the silly thing is, I studied the sex industry. So the people that I interview and research make more than me. I mean, it's really silly.
You study what industry?
The sex industry.
It's an industry?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we have legal brothels out here.
No kidding.
No kidding. Yeah. Only place in the country, so it's worth looking at, you know?
Doing any field work, as they say?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, just curious.
No, I mean, it's very, very clear that you need a brake master cylinder.
Okay.
And it was unconscionable of those guys to send you away because, obviously, it's dangerous.
Uh-huh.
And the description that you gave leads clearly to a master cylinder.
And isn't Lake Powell near Las Vegas?
I don't know. We have Lake Mead, which is about 40 minutes away.
40 minutes. And what do people do on Lake Mead?
Just try and stay cool. You know, boating, swimming,
boating.
All that stuff.
Yeah. So it's likely that the guys to whom you took the car could even have a boat.
That's right.
And if they had a boat, they'd have to make what?
Boat payments.
Boat payments.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, they could have made a boat payment and saved your life at the same time.
There you go. So this is indeed a threatening kind of problem.
Don't wait.
Do it tomorrow.
Got it.
Right.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Kate.
All right. Take care.
How can a mechanic send away a person who complains of a brake problem? The car won't stop. The pedal
goes to
the floor.
Well, it's unconscionable. Brake problems require some kind of repair. Even if you don't know exactly what it is, do something.
Of course.
Because at least you'll be one step closer to figuring it out. And if you do nothing, you can't get any closer.
Yeah. Jeez,
and that's,
come on.
I know. Come on. What does it take? 1-888.
I mean, if we know, they should have known, too.
They should have known, exactly. Car Talk. That's 888.
We hardly know anything.
227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello. This is Rob Romans from Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
Rob.
Yeah, I'm a captain out here in the Army.
Fort Sill?
Yeah.
Where's Fort Sill?
Well, you know where Lawton is?
No.
Lawton, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Of course.
Lawton, Fort Sill. It's actually one town now. Lawton got smart and annexed Fort Sill because they figured there was about 20,000 soldiers they could add to their rolls and start getting some decent restaurants out here.
What's up?
Well, let me tell you. I've got a 1989 Chevrolet Suburban. And the reason I'm calling is that my wife's family is coming out here to do the grand tour of the West during the hottest time of year with the highest gas prices. They want to leave from Lawton and drive to the Grand Canyon and go into Colorado and go to Santa Fe and then go down to some caves down in New Mexico, Carlsbad, and then back into Lawton. That's a 5,000-mile round trip.
Is her mother going?
Here's the deal. You hit the nail on the head. 2 years ago, when I was stationed in Germany, I had a 1989 Chevy Suburban. Not the same one, but same model, make, and year.
Yeah, yeah.
And we took a big trip through Austria, France, and down into Italy and Switzerland. And my mother-in-law, bless her heart, never been out on any major trip, started out the trip by saying, "Rob, you're driving too fast." On the and I blew the head gaskets down in Italy. Guys, can you imagine how hard it is to fix a truck in Italy when all you speak is a little Spanglish?
Yeah. Spanglish?
Oh, you must have been there for a month, and I'm amazed that the Italians actually fixed it.
Actually, they didn't. They put it on a flatbed truck and drove it back to Germany.
That was smart. Yeah, so, they knew their limitations.
So I cannot afford to have something bad happen on this trip with my mother-in-law, sister-in-law, their two kids, my brother-in-law, my wife, and my two kids, plus myself.
Oh, how did you get yourself into this, man?
I have no say in any matter. I am the bus driver on this trip.
Rob, you're an officer, man. Take charge.
Yes, in the Army. That don't count for much once I get home.
If they went on their own without you, that would be good, wouldn't it?
That would be a wonderful thing. And if I could get you guys to say something to that effect.
You might have to shoot yourself in the foot.
Do we still do that in the Army? I'm not sure. It was a court-martial offense last time I checked. But
Why not just fake a shot in the foot? Do you know any doctors who would bandage you up?
Actually, there's an Army doctor that lives on our street, and I really wouldn't have to fake it, actually, because they're Army doctors.
I would avoid the trip at all costs. I mean, if they're going to take it, have them take the Suburban at their own peril.
Well, that's the problem. It's that own peril part, because the Suburban that I've got now has an odd problem, and I can't get a straight answer from the dealership or from any of the independents about what's causing it.
Ah, okay, so we're going to get to the technical part of this call now.
The truck hesitates. It kind of, I'll be driving highway speeds, 55 to 65, and it hesitates for absolutely no reason, kind of like a hiccup. You know, you'll feel, when you're driving, you'll feel yourself lunge against your seatbelt.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it comes and goes. That's when I'm in overdrive, just regular OD.
Mm-hmm.
If I drop it down to its next gear, that problem seems to go away. The folks at the Chevy dealership told me, it's probably just your fuel filter or your transmission filter. Now, those things are easy to fix. I changed those both out a while ago, and the problem never went away. What do y'all think?
I think you have a sensor problem someplace. I would ask them to put the scanner on this thing. I think you could have a bad crank angle sensor.
Crank angle sensor, okay.
You could have a bad ignition module.
All right.
But to start guessing at this stuff could be costly. You need someone to actually scan these things or begin to test the individual components to see if they measure up.
Now, could it be something as silly as I've just got a bad spark plug?
It could, but it would more likely do it climbing a steep hill.
Yeah, and I don't have too many of those out in Oklahoma.
Right, you may have to wait.
Or on hard acceleration.
Yeah, on hard acceleration. But you're going to have to take it to a shop because this is not something you're going to figure out at the hobby shop.
And you may even have to take it to a dealer.
All right.
Yeah, and maybe they can keep it for like 2 months.
Now, you're not, in other words, this vehicle could put my family in mortal jeopardy. I need to sell it and buy a Yugo.
Hey, Cap, I wish you the very best, and thank God it's you and not me.
Say some novenas for me.
You bet we will.
See you later. See you later,
Thanks
Rob.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thanks
Good
for
luck.
Calling.
Bye-bye. Bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Erin calling from Silver Spring, Maryland.
Erin.
Erin.
E-R-I-N.
Yeah, we got it.
Okay.
Silver Spring, Maryland.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, my question is the classic marital dispute. My husband and I now, I have an 84 Toyota Cressida station wagon, and my husband's car is an 85 BMW 535i, and we're going to be doing the minivan thing pretty soon.
I can tell by the kids.
I see it now.
By the kids I hear in the background.
Yeah. And the question is, whose car do we sell? Because my car has fewer miles on it, would be less expensive to maintain, and we wouldn't get as much money for it. If we sell his car, then we get more money, and we're left with a car that's got lower mileage and less expensive.
Did you come up with this argument all on your own here?
Yes.
Keeping your car, selling his car?
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, how violently opposed to this is he?
He's not violently opposed, but when I said it to him, he said, so then we'd have a station wagon and a minivan, you know, and I realize this is a guy thing, but the other thing is that my husband doesn't drive to work anymore. He just takes the train. So, I mean, I could see if, you know, he was going to be in the car all the time, but we you know, he literally, the BMW is sitting in the garage all the time.
Oh.
So
he doesn't really care.
Well, I mean, he likes his car. A while ago, we had the opportunity to get a Toyota sedan, and we you know, like, supposedly put his car in the market, but he was really, like, half-hearted about it. You know, I got from that he kind of likes his car and doesn't want to sell it.
Yeah, I mean...
And was he the one when he tried to sell it that accompanied all the prospective buyers on the test drive?
Well, he's the one that, you know...
He said, well, don't worry about the fact that, it leaks a lot of oil, but
right,
that's all right.
Exactly.
Burns some oil, the engine has a wrap in it, and the transmission
kind of
slips, but you'll get a good 6 months out of it.
Exactly, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have to say that logic would dictate that you do exactly what you propose because you are the wiser of the two.
Uh-huh.
And you realize you wouldn't get as much money for the Cressida, so why sell it? It's
right.
Got fewer miles.
Right.
Cost you less to fix, but not by much.
Less to fix and all that stuff. On the other hand,
yes.
You are already,
yes.
By buying a minivan,
yes.
Emasculating the poor man to
yes.
The extent that it's inhumane. So the least you can do is forget about the economics for a moment
uh-huh.
And let the guy keep his BMW.
Well, yeah, I mean, you might as well just buy him some plaid pants.
But what I was thinking is maybe we could get one of these minivans that, you know, had like leather seats and...
Oh, yeah, that's going to really do it for him.
No, it's not a good one.
I don't think so. Leather seats. Come on, Erin. The guy's driving a Bimmer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't
know. He likes shifting, too.
Sure. I mean, there's no way to understand what is going to happen when you go into the minivan parallel universe.
Yeah.
And if you make him drive either the minivan or the Cressida, you don't know what's going to happen to him.
He will start to slump over.
But see, he doesn't, I mean, he never drives his BMW anymore.
Doesn't anyway. Have to, just he's the fact a, that he, I mean, I have a pocket watch that I never wear, but I have it.
Yeah.
I can go and look at it. You don't know it, late at night when you and the kids are asleep, he's in the garage stroking the BMW.
And saying vroom, vroom, vroom.
No,
and when people at the office say, what do you drive, Bill? He says, I drive a Bimmer. I mean, he's going to have to say, what do you drive, Bill? Cressida.
Yeah.
What was that, Bill?
Town and country.
So the economic factors are not so overwhelming that it's worth emasculating him, as you said.
I don't.
I would say not.
No. There is no amount of money.
And if you explain, I wouldn't use the term emasculation when you discuss it with him, but I would say, hon, I've thought this over, and although economically it makes sense for us to sell the BMW, I think you, even though you won't admit it, I think you really love the BMW, and I want us to keep it so you will be happy, my love.
Oh, okay. That's good.
That's what I would do.
Right. And then if you've really been able, if you've really succeeded in brainwashing him, he will say,
oh,
oh hon,
okay.
You know, we really, you're right. We should dump the Bimmer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
if
the
you,
old reverse psychology.
If it's worked.
Okay.
You'll be he'll be driving the Cressida and you'll be driving the minivan.
No, you know what he'll say? He'll say, well, hon, I think we should sell the Bimmer, and with the extra money, we'll go down and get that pearl necklace that you've been admiring down there at Swanson's Jewelers.
Well, thank you very much for your help.
All righty. Good luck, Aaron.
We love your show.
All righty. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Tommy, think hard. Do you remember last week's puzzler?
I don't remember no stinking puzzler.
That's right. There was no puzzler last week. The puzzler is on summer hiatus. It's out in the Hamptons getting a laser face peel.
How are we going to kill all that time in the second half of the show?
Stay tuned and I'll show you how a real pro does it. We'll be back in just a minute.
Ooh.
Cruising around about 76. 8-track blasting, tuned by sticks. Tried to make it easy to the flicks. Up to my usual bag of tricks. Naked in a bag of late 78. Way past curfew, getting late. Fog in the windows, you can almost taste. Prom dress crumpled up around her waist. Little red baby, you make me smile. Radio stuck, ain't got no dial.
And even though Marconi rolls over in his grave every time we say it, this is NPR.
Support for the Car Talk podcast and the following message come from Podium. They help local businesses build an accurate, authentic online reputation through reviews. Take control of your online reputation by giving your customers a voice, and not just a handful of angry ones. Reviews do matter. The way you show up online determines who shows up at your door. So get started today. Go to podium.com/cartalk for 10% off your monthly subscription. Support for the Car Talk podcast and the following message come from JB Weld. When you have a big or small repair project at home or in your garage, choose JB Weld, the leader in epoxy adhesives. JB Weld products bond strongly to a variety of surfaces in even the toughest environments. Proudly made in the USA, it's the brand both pros and experienced DIYers have trusted for more than 50 years. Available at jbweld.com, Amazon, Walmart, and your local auto parts or home improvement retailer.
It has already been an eventful summer in politics.
Yeah, between the 2020 debates and the president's battle over immigration, there's a lot going on.
And when there's news you need to know about, the NPR Politics podcast is there to tell you what happened.
Not to mention, we're hitting the road so you can meet all of the 2020 contenders.
Oh, NPR is going to drive me completely crazy.
The NPR Politics podcast.
Subscribe!
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and I believe my brother has, like, mail to read. You have mail?
Well, it is mail. A couple of weeks ago, you may remember, we asked people to send us stories of road trips that had gone wrong.
Oh, yeah.
The road trip from hell or something we called it. And I have one. I wouldn't say this is a winner, but I have one from Tom Martinez, who sends it, and his summer vacation story, what I did this summer. I could sum up this little adventure in one phrase. 1977 MG Midget. But here it is anyway. I left Los Angeles in July of 1979 with my girlfriend, the MG Midget, and a lot of naivete.
Wait, is the girlfriend the MG Midget? Or...
No. We were headed for Yosemite. Going up the Cajon Pass, is that what it's called? C-A-J-O-N?
Cajon.
The Cajon. Going up the Cajon Pass, the car boiled over, so we stopped and let it simmer down.
It's like from Cajones, you know.
I was afraid of that. As soon as we hit Victorville, the accelerator cable let go. I found a foreign parts store and the only cable...
Not to be confused with cojones.
Will you stop interrupting me? I found a foreign parts store and the only cable I had was for a Spitfire and it barely worked. We made it up Tioga Pass, sputtering all the way. I hit a deer at the summit. Broke both headlights. It was dark, so we slept by the side of the road. The next morning, we got to Yosemite Valley and promptly lost the clutch. I tried unsuccessfully for 2 days to fix it. That night, bears ate all our food. This guy is having a great time, isn't he? The next day, a stranger suggested that I drive the car without the clutch. I didn't know how, so he taught me the finer points, speed shifting, etc. The next morning, we loaded up and headed out toward Merced, grinding the gears on twisting mountain roads. We made it to Merced in time for a rainstorm. Of course, the roof leaked. The fuel pump gave out in Salinas. We had it fixed in Monterey. It cost a fortune. We made it down to Bakersfield when the water pump went.
But fortunately, Paul Drake was waiting for them in Bakersfield.
We finally puttered into the San Fernando Valley, and what happened? The throttle cable broke again. Boy, this guy, this is serious business. And he blames it on the MG.
Now, I'll tell you one thing.
Which could be true.
If he had, for example, a Toyota Corolla with which to make this trip.
Uneventful.
Nothing would have gone wrong.
Absolutely.
And he'd have forgotten it by now.
Exactly.
It would have been just another trip to Yosemite Park, mm-hmm. and he's probably taken many.
Yeah, and this is the one he remembers.
It's memorable.
Exactly right.
It was like the time I borrowed your truck and the exhaust system fell off and all those things happened. I mean, yeah.
I'm never going to lend you a vehicle of mine again.
You don't own a vehicle I'd want to borrow. Oh, maybe that's your rationale.
That's my strategy from now on.
Anyway, if you've got a tale about a road trip that went horribly awry, email it to us through our website, cartalk.com. The person with the best, or I should say worst story, will get an all-expense-paid weekend in the breakdown lane of I-95 just outside Bridgeport, Connecticut. I once spent a weekend there myself. Right now, if you have a current tale of automotive woe and or slash intrigue, give us a call at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Elizabeth, and I'm in Pensacola, Florida.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth!
Well, you sound way too perky for us.
You know why?
Why?
She's probably an astronaut.
Oh, no.
Oh, I thought you... Never mind.
What's up?
Well, I have a 95 Dodge Stratus, and only in the summer, what it's doing is it slips into neutral while I'm driving.
Oh.
Either that or it'll slip into a lower gear, and I can't go over 45.
Yeah? Have you done anything dramatic, like checking the transmission fluid level?
Transmission fluid level?
Yeah.
No, not me.
Not her. She's not going to do this. This little lady ain't going to check no transmission fluid levels.
Well, I would suggest you do that.
Okay.
It may already be too late.
Okay.
That would be bad. It would be sad, even.
It would be sad, but
it would be expensive.
What you describe could easily be attributed to low fluid level.
Okay, in the transmission.
Right, and the transmission has a dipstick. If you look under the hood, there are two dipsticks.
She doesn't want to know.
She doesn't want to know.
Oh, I know the oil dipstick, but I don't know the other one. My husband works on the car.
Well, why hasn't he been checking your vital fluids?
Well, I guess I don't know. I'll have to ask him about that one.
Well, I suspect that he has been checking.
I would hope so.
Either that or he's going out and playing golf.
Oh, no.
Does he change the oil and do those kinds of things?
Oh, yes. He's quite good at that, but he doesn't understand, like, the newer cars with computer chips and all that.
That's all right.
That's all right. No one else does either.
The thing is, if I shut off the car and restart it, it'll reset it and it's fine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And it'll happen when I'm on the freeway, mainly on the freeway. Sometimes when I'm just on the street.
Well, this
changes everything.
Okay.
You know, there's a computer that shifts this transmission, and it could be that that's at fault.
What can I do about that?
Well, your husband's not going to be able to help you, nor are we. You need to go to the Dodge dealer.
Oh, okay.
And tell them what's going on and ask them to scan the computer to find out if there's something wrong with one of the sensors or if there's something wrong internally.
And how much does that cost?
Oh, man.
Test is going to be minor.
Okay.
The repair may be in the big numbers.
Okay.
I don't want to tell you. You really don't want to know.
Okay.
Yeah, and it needn't be as dire as it sounds to
okay.
us.
Yeah.
Who knows? It may be something innocuous. It may be, you know, like not enough water in the radiator or something like that.
Yeah, or maybe your fuzzy dice need to be rotated.
A little air in the tires.
Well, there you go. But don't be surprised if it's over $1,000.
Oh, man.
See you, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
All right, bye.
Poor Elizabeth.
She sounded perky. She ain't going to be perky tomorrow.
No, if she calls tomorrow, she goes, Jesus. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-2-782-55. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Steve Weinberg calling from East Brunswick, New Jersey. How are you?
Good, Steve.
How are you?
Pretty good. I need your help.
We're ready.
I've got four adult children, and I've taught them all how to drive.
Yeah.
And I try to teach them how to be good defensive drivers.
Yeah.
And particularly, I've been on a war to try to teach them how to deal with that very terrible evil of driving, the blind spot.
Yeah.
Somehow I figured out about 10 years ago that rather than use the side view mirrors to prevent the theft of your door handles while you're driving, you know, keep them in there tight, you can really watch the door handles.
Yes. Right.
If you tilt them out as far as they'll go, away from the car.
Yes.
As cars pass you by, for instance, they'll go from your rear view mirror, they'll go into your side view mirror if you kind of glance at the side view mirror, and
yes.
By the time they're out of the side view mirror, they're in your peripheral vision. So you're always got them in control. The side view mirror covers the blind spot.
So you tilt those babies way out.
Way out. As
way
far
out.
As they will go, because as far as they'll go. I bend them.
So you can see, like, the trees going by.
Trees going by. Woo! When there's no cars, it's trees.
Well,
shrubs, curb line.
I'm not sure I like this, Steve.
I've experimented at some length with the side view mirrors, too. I've turned mine up to the sky. That works the best. No, what I've discovered, if you turn them out too far, you have no frame of reference. I like to keep a portion of my car in the picture. Not the door handle.
I always do
that,
too. But
some little piece of the car.
Otherwise, you don't have a point of reference where things
there's
are.
There's an echo in here.
I have the same. That's my practice as well. I always leave a little piece of the car that I can see.
I hope my kids aren't listening.
Well, only because, I mean, even though what you say is true, it means that you can see everything out the rearview mirror, and that isn't quite true. Because if the rearview mirror, the one that's inside the car, is facing straight back as it should be, then you can't see things that are a little over to your left or right.
That's right. Those are your blind spots.
Yeah, and you won't see them if you turn the mirrors all the way out either.
Sure you will.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's what I do.
Oh, well, you know, these mirrors...
If a car's passing me, let's say on my, like they're supposed to, or they're used to anyway in the old days.
On your left.
On my left side.
Yeah.
I'll see them coming up behind me in the rear view mirror.
Right.
As the car really leaves my rear view mirror, I glance at my left side view mirror. Car's sitting right
and
there.
And there he is, huh?
Right there in the side view mirror.
Do you spend...
Staring me in the face.
Steve.
And as it leaves that side view mirror, boom, it's right in my peripheral vision on my left side.
Do you spend, when you're driving, do you spend any time, like, looking
forward.
Ahead, forward, like at the road in front of you?
I mean, I told you what I did. I do exactly what my brother does, and maybe we are wrong. Maybe all these years we've been doing it wrong.
Not you.
No, it's very likely.
Not you.
Well, I have huge mirrors on my truck.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they're enormous. I have no blind spot except
those curved mirrors.
I don't have curved mirrors.
Oh.
I have big flat mirrors.
Yeah.
Big. I mean, one of them is like the size of Arizona, and the other one's just a little bit smaller. And then I have glued to them convex mirrors.
Oh yeah.
I can see
everything.
Six states
everything.
When I drive. The problem is I can't see forward. I have blind spots in the front when I'm making rights and lefts.
The mirrors are in the way.
I take out pedestrians all the time. Pedestrians, bicycles, mopeds, they're all at risk.
Steve, you may be onto something here, and I am definitely going to try it.
Well, Steve, we'll give it a shot. I'll do this driving my brother's car, let you know if it works.
I'll try it tomorrow.
I'll stay tuned and listen.
All right.
I'm going to spend the week experimenting with my mirrors turned up, and I'll call you back next week.
Okay.
And see what happens.
See you, Steve.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kathy from Connecticut.
Just Connecticut,
oh,
huh?
Oh, Connecticut. Kathy.
Kathy with an H. There's an H. There's an H. Is there an H in your name?
Well, the A is the safest letter.
It's actually, it starts with a K. I know most people
Well, I had that too. Kathy with a K and with an H.
Well, see what I had. Now, I'm going to just show my brother. We have little scraps of paper in front of us. What did I write here?
Athy.
I know whether to start.
I wrote.
That's safe.
I know whether to put a K or a C.
I wrote Kathy with an H.
I left it out.
Athy. So you're just from Connecticut.
Are you from the rich part of Connecticut?
No, no. Over Rocky Hill, which is a suburb of Hartford.
Yeah, Hartford's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's central Connecticut.
So what's up?
I have a 1990 Camry. Right now, what it does, when I brake, it goes from, it'll pop up. When it reaches, it starts approaching about 800 RPMs, it'll pop up to about 1,100 and try to take off when I'm braking.
Uh-huh.
Now, previous to this, I had a problem with the air conditioning, and they said, well, you know, let's turn up the idle a little bit.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Then I took it in the second time, and they, oh, by the way, the first time, then they said, well, I'll change the Freon and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
I took it in the second time. I said, well, it still doesn't cool when it's, when I'm sitting in a stop. So I said, well, we'll jack up the idle a little more. And they decided to also change and buy an idle-up valve or something like that. And the third time, they said, well, they didn't charge me for the labor for the first time, which was pretty good, just for the part. But yet I have this surge when I drive, when I put on the brake and I'm trying to slow down.
And now the air conditioning works or still doesn't work?
Now it does what it's supposed to do, which it works in a stop situation.
Ah.
Yeah, they put some sort of, we called it an idle-up valve. It sounded like...
How much did the thing cost? Was it a couple of $100?
No, 45.
$45?
Might have just been the solenoid.
Yeah.
All right.
When you have the air conditioner on, it's drawing energy from the engine, right? Because it's got to get its energy somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And if you come to a stop when the car is idling slowly...
Look, I'm working on the answer, so elaborate.
I'm going to elaborate
on
this.
Just go really into depth.
Yeah. It would be possible with the engine running very slowly, as it's supposed to do at idle, because it's, what, idling, it's just hanging around, you know, like my brother does when he makes believe he's working. And the engine could stall if it got to run too slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this device, which idles up. It speeds up the engine when you come to a stop when the idle ordinarily would be low. It speeds up the idle so it won't stall.
Okay.
So they replaced the mechanism that does that. How are you doing? You got an answer yet?
Oh, I got it. No, I just spilled hot coffee on my... No.
Sue everybody.
Gee, they didn't replace anything.
You don't think so?
No, this doesn't have an idle. This doesn't have a solenoid. This is all done by the computer and the idle air control.
Okay, so they charged me $45
for
nothing, for no part. They charge you $45 labor.
Uh-huh.
Maybe they replaced a part. Who knows what they did? There's something wrong with this thing. Either the something else is wrong with it, and they're trying to mask it by turning up the idle speed.
Ooh.
Okay.
And I'm going to guess. This is a wild guess. That you had the timing belt replaced recently.
No, actually, I didn't. It has about 110,000 miles.
All right. I have a full back position. Well, you should have had it replaced because it's going to break tomorrow. And the reason that you have this problem is the fall back
this
position.
This is the fall back
position. The timing
position.
Belt is stretched.
Yeah.
And it is,
I knew.
And it is thrown off the ignition timing.
Yeah. This is good. This is very good.
Your ignition timing is incorrect. I bet you when they take that belt off, how many miles are on this thing? 90,000?
No, 110.
110.
That belt is hanging on by the proverbial thread.
This
and
is
that's
bad.
That's the whole source. The air conditioning problem is something else. You needed Freon. They did that, and it solved that problem.
No, it didn't. It didn't solve it until they replaced the so-called valve.
No.
You're suggesting that they did it wrong the first time.
I'm suggesting skullduggery.
Skullduggery. They did it wrong the first time. She brought it back, and they made up the story about the idle-up stuff.
Right. They had to charge you for the Freon.
Right. And they said, Murray, didn't you put in the Freon last time Kathy was here? Oh, geez, I forgot to do it. Do it now. We'll give us some bogus story about idle, and that'll get rid of her.
And we'll charge you more money. Because it's what? Something different.
Something different.
All right, so I'll replace my timing belt.
And have them set the ignition timing and have them set the curb idle speed by turning the bleed screw in to the correct setting, and all the surging will be stopped.
Okay.
I promise.
Sounds good.
Yeah,
sounds
it does sound good, doesn't it? See you, Kathy.
I'd like to know. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's why people keep listening, because it does sound good. If only it worked good. Okay, look, it's time for us to take a little break.
Just how little? I mean, do I have time to write personalized thank you notes to each and every one of our loyal listeners? That kind of a break?
Ashley, there's no rush. They're both doing life.
Stay tuned. I have great mail when we come back in just a minute.
I should be wearing out the black top, out there with the boys I love. Everybody, will you roll with me, roll with me, running down the street, and get me out there on the highway.
And even though Nepalese yaks leave a deposit on the nearest shortwave radio whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Support for the Car Talk podcast and the following message come from Valvoline Motor Oil. Did you know higher mileage engines need different motor oil? Well, Valvoline does, because they test oil every day in their state-of-the-art engine lab in Ashland, Kentucky. Valvoline's high mileage motor oils with MaxLife technology are specifically formulated for high mileage engines and have thick anti-wear film to help protect metal surfaces and extend engine life. Visit Valvoline.com/CarTalk to find out what product is right for your engine.
The U.S. women's soccer team just won its fourth World Cup, and it has been way more successful than the men's team. Yet, the women say they are paid less than half of what the male soccer players are, and now they are suing for equal pay. Find out more about this on The Indicator from NPR.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about what? Cars, car repair, and the answer to an important philosophical question.
You're going to love this.
I'm sure I will.
This is from Andy Reichman from Marlboro, Vermont, 05344. Dear Click and Clack, I'm writing to offer profound thanks to you for resolving an important philosophical question that has been heatedly debated for the last 20 years.
Really?
Get this now. The rumination began on a construction site one summer in the early 70s as my best friend Jamie and I were working our way through college. The question we raised and have agonized over lo these many years is one that I have never read about in any philosophical treatise, and yet I have found it has applied to countless situations and conversations, overheard in bars, repair shops, sporting events, political debates, etc., etc. Posit the question. Do two people who don't know what they're talking about know more or less than one person who doesn't know what he's talking about?
Is wow. Let me think about this for a minute. What's your opinion?
I'll get this. I believe that you have definitively answered this query and have put the debate to rest in your recent conversation regarding electric brakes on a cattle carrier. Remember that call a few weeks ago?
Oh, I do.
Amazingly enough, you prove that even in a case where one person might know nothing about a subject, it is possible for two people
to know less than nothing. Well, I think we prefaced our answer with the fact that we know nothing.
He says that. He says one person will only go out so far on a limb.
Unless he has someone to egg him on.
His construction of deeply hypothetical structures, and will often end with a shrug or raising of hands to indicate the dismissibility of his particular take on the subject. With two people, the intricacies, the gives and takes, the wherefores and why nots can become a veritable pas de deux of breathtaking speculation. This is a great letter. Interwoven in such a way that apologies or gestures of doubt are rendered unnecessary. I had always suspected this was the case, but no argument I could have built from my years of observation would have so satisfyingly closed the door on the subject as your performance on the cattle carrier call. To begin your comments by saying, we'll answer your question if you tell us how electric brakes work, And we've never heard.
That was a tip off.
We've never heard of electric brakes. I remember saying that. And then indulge in lengthy theoretical postulations on the whys and wherefores of the caller's problem allowed me to observe that you were finally putting this gnarly question to rest. I am forever indebted to you for the great service you have performed. I'm truly impressed that it took so many years of listening to your show to finally have this matter resolved. Andy Reichman. Boy. This guy had to be an English major at UVM.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, they don't. That's good writing, man.
That is a good letter.
See, now, I want the rest of
the listeners. I want to know how electric brakes do work.
I never heard of electric brakes. I just want to point out that this letter is the paradigm to which all our other listeners should aspire. I've been asking for good mail for weeks now. Andy, boy, oh, boy, you are going to be...
And this is the benchmark letter.
This is it. This is the benchmark.
Yeah.
So I know.
We will rate all letters. We'll give them an Andy 1 to 10.
Ah, okay. We'll rate them on an Andy scale.
Right.
Yeah. Like an Emmy, an Oscar, and an Andy.
An Andy.
I will save Andy Reichman for wow.
Yeah. His letter's actually an 8.
Shh.
I mean, there's room for improvement.
There's room for improvement. Wow.
All right. Talk about room for improvement. You will see. In moments.
With two people, the intricacies, the gives and takes, the wherefores and why nots
can become pas de deux.
A breathtaking speculation interwoven in such a way that apologies or gestures of doubt are rendered unnecessary. Woohoo! So two people can know more less than one person.
Oh, yeah. No,
we knew that. If he had just asked us the question, we could have answered that.
By the way, if you tuned in expecting a brilliant new puzzler, then you obviously tuned into the wrong show. Actually, the puzzler is on break.
Mm.
Summer
break.
Summer, fall break. But you can always try your hand at one of our classic puzzlers, which we'll post every
classic
week.
Classic, old.
Meaning old, yeah.
Used.
Which we'll post every week on our website, cartalk.com. In the meantime, if you have a question about your car or anything else, you can give us a call at 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Angie from Mount Pleasant, Michigan.
Mount Pleasant, Michigan.
Right in the center.
And how mountainous is it?
Oh, boy, we're still looking for the mountain.
I thought so.
So your real name is Angela?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What can we do for you, Angela?
Well, I have a 1994 Saturn SL1. And I bought the car from the then president of the university that I work at. Mm-hmm. Well, in the wintertime, I started noticing that I wasn't getting very good gas mileage. And I thought maybe it was because I was running the defrost, you know, Michigan winters.
Yes.
I'm getting about 150 to 170 miles per tank. And I have a 10-gallon tank.
Wow.
Yes.
What kind of a dog is it you have?
Oh, my goodness. I have 5.
It's not a Shih Tzu, is it?
This is a name you really can't fool around with too much.
The one you're hearing is a Black Lab Wiener Dog.
A Wiener Dog? That's another name. Never
mind. A Black Lab with a little wimpy little bark like that?
Well, she looks like a Dash Hound, but...
Oh, she's a combination?
Yes.
Oh.
She just looks...
Wait, how did that ever come about?
Oh, I don't want to know.
I know.
Yeah, well, let's not go there.
No. Well, it might be more fun than the SL1. 5 dogs, huh?
Yeah.
So you have this lab dachshund mix, and what else do you have?
Oh, my goodness. Black Lab Chow, a Golden Retriever mix, a Black Lab something, and then a Golden Retriever Cocker Spaniel.
Oh, so that Excellent. Black lab has been around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Except for not anymore.
Puts a smile on your face.
I made sure.
No, he's out of commission, eh?
Yeah.
He's been decommissioned?
All of them are.
Oh, really?
No more talk.
That's good. It's good to decommission pets.
Yes.
But, so 5, huh?
Yeah.
17 miles to the gallon, huh?
And I've taken it to everyone I could possibly take in Mount Pleasant, and they've tried everything.
Does this car have a temperature gauge on the dash?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna take a wild guess here.
Yeah, I like it. I like it already.
That the thing is running well below the midpoint, that needle. No matter how far and hard you drive it,
okay.
It never even approaches the halfway point.
Okay.
And that would absolutely explain the drop in mileage and with no other symptoms.
Okay.
Because the engine isn't getting hot enough, and because it's not getting hot enough, the computer is being told to send in an amount of fuel which you would need for a cold engine.
Okay.
Which is too much fuel for a real engine that's warmed up.
If, in fact, you notice that the thermometer on the dash is indicating low operating temperature, then have someone change the thermostat.
Well, do you get good heat in the winter?
Pretty good.
It's pretty good, but it's a little bit disappointing,
well,
shall we say?
I just always kind of figured that it's a no-frills car.
No, the heat should blast you out.
No, the heat, no matter how inexpensive the car, the heat should still be hot.
Okay.
Hot heat.
No, so I'm even if they say, we don't think this is it, replace the thermostat anyway, I guarantee you it's going to fix
it. Say, Ray said that he doesn't care what the hell you think. Just replace the thermostat and shut up.
Okay. I can do that.
All right. See you, Angie.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your
call. Good
luck. Bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, this is Mike from Tallahassee.
Hey, Mike.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Pretty good.
Excellent.
I got a question.
Yeah.
I got a Dodge Ram 50, and every time, not every time, actually, 2 months ago to begin with.
And Ram 50 is the pickup truck, right?
It's a pickup truck.
Who knows these days?
I was getting off the highway, and I downshifted from fourth to second, and the entire stick went loose. And at first I thought it was just, you know, the transmission had, like, totally gone out, and that was the end of the truck.
Yeah.
But when I got it home, it turns out that the whole stick had come off the mount.
How did you get it home? It stayed in second gear?
It stayed in second. I was, like, really close to home.
Yeah. You couldn't shift it at all at that point.
Right. I couldn't change gears at all.
Right.
I got home, and I you know, lifted up the sleeve, and I looked underneath, and it turns out that the grommet, well, first of all, it had all come loose. All the bolts had come out, and it was just like this.
The shifter goes right into the transmission on this truck.
Right.
Does it not? Is there four bolts that hold the shifter?
It's three bolts. That hold the shifter.
Well, there used to be four. You probably lost.
You lost a couple.
It's okay. You know, three bolts.
Probably lost two.
Okay.
Anyway, so yeah, I called Mitsubishi, who makes the transmission, and they had the grommet that goes onto the ball at the bottom of the stick.
Uh huh.
Yep.
And I replaced that because that was broken. And then they said because the the gaskets had all rotted out.
Right.
They said you don't need the gaskets. The gaskets only keep oil from leaking, so you don't need to replace those. So I just bolted it back down. I didn't bolt it down. I didn't, like, lock the nuts in because I didn't want to strip them, but I locked it down pretty tight. Now, in the past 2 months, it's come up three times.
Oh.
And it won't stay down, and I don't know what to do to keep it down.
It won't stay down because you're probably afraid to tighten them enough.
Really?
Well, I guess. I mean, it's aluminum that you're screwing those bolts into.
Uh-huh.
That's what the case of the transmission is made out of, so there was some reason to be afraid.
There is, because you could break them off in there, but it's not the end of the world if you do.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I would use
Loctite.
Loctite, exactly.
Loctite. What is Loctite?
It's a liquid.
Uh-huh.
You buy it in a little bottle. It's one that's like a Lumiseal.
Uh-huh.
It costs $750 a pound, so you only can buy half an ounce of it because it costs you $12.
Uh-huh.
And you just paint it on the end on the threads and bolt it in.
You have to clean them all off first. Usually you clean them with something like Brake Clean,
uh-huh,
which is a solvent that depletes the ozone layer.
Right.
Great.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. No, that's all those things are now ozone ruining chemicals.
Safe.
Safe.
Free. Yeah.
No,
friendly.
That's good.
Ozone layer friendly.
Ozone layer.
Yeah. OLF. Right.
And then you just bolt it in.
Uh-huh.
You should snug it up pretty good.
Uh-huh.
And that will keep them from backing out.
Oh.
But I don't think
unless you've got something else going on here, like an engine that's vibrating so violently that nothing's going to keep them from backing out.
Well,
but I don't think so.
I was talking to a friend, and I'll go from fourth to second just right
Why
away.
Do you do that anyway?
Why not?
Why?
You shouldn't.
It's just quicker.
What do you mean you shouldn't? Where the hell is it written that you have to follow? That's another one of these old wives' tales, that you got to go 1, 2, 3, 4 on the way up, and you got to go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 on the way down. Where does it say that? Who said you have to do that?
My daddy told me.
Your daddy was wrong. You can do anything you want. You can go from fifth to first.
Good, try it, Mike.
Try it. Even if you don't have a fifth, who cares?
Well, one of the...
Have a fifth, and you'll be able to go, go anywhere.
One of the risks of jumping, skipping gears, many gears on downshifting, is that when you re-engage the clutch, the engine's going to rev like mad.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
Well, you could ruin the engine.
Duh.
If you were driving at 60 miles an hour and you did something as stupid as shifting from fifth to second.
Can I confess something to you, actually?
Yes, you've done it with Dougie's car. I know. I did it with his car, too.
No, I'll confess this, but don't tell anybody. And in some ways, this is a commendation. I was driving the Infiniti i30 a couple of weeks ago. That car is so quiet that one day there I was barreling along on Route 93, and I just happened to glance at the dash, and the tach was, shall we say, very high. I was doing 60 miles an hour in second gear.
Really?
I couldn't hear the engine. It was so quiet. Granted, I had all the windows open and the wind was blowing, but nonetheless, it was so quiet that if I hadn't seen that tach pinned.
and the needle quavering.
But, I mean, it's testimony to the quietness of that
car. Oh, no, that's a wonderful car. I wish I'd had the opportunity to drive
no,
it, but
you,
I was prevented.
Not anymore, you won't. They blew the engine. No, but it's unlikely that you'll blow the engine or even harm the engine if you go from fourth. Is this five speeds or four?
Four.
Four. So you go from four to two.
Uh-huh.
It's no big deal. I mean, don't forget, you've braked a little bit. That's why you're shifting in at all.
Right, right.
So you're not doing 60 miles an hour when you're throwing it into second gear. You're doing 25.
But that wouldn't be causing the stick to come off like that.
No.
Oh, no, no. That would never. That's a separate issue.
No, you didn't tighten the bolts enough, Mike. Crank those babies down.
Crank them down, but use Loctite, and you won't have the problem anymore.
All right, what was the stuff I'm supposed to use to clean the bolts with?
Anything.
Brake clean.
Brake clean.
Yeah, or alcohol, or nail polish remover.
Something to get the grease off the bolt and the threads inside.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to get the stuff all nice and clean when you put... Of course, you'll never get those bolts out again. So they're in for life.
Yeah.
Great.
No, they'll come out with difficulty. And by the way, if you're using the old gaskets over again, you can coat... both surfaces with silicone adhesive.
Well, I haven't put any gaskets in because they said the only thing the gaskets did was kept the oil from leaking.
Oh, so you have no gaskets?
No gaskets.
Oh no, make a gasket.
Really?
Buy a tube of silicone adhesive.
Uh huh.
Okay, and spread a bead of it, maybe a 1/16 of an inch thick on one surface.
Right.
And then put your Loctite on the bolts and put that together, and it'll be like welding it together. It'll never come apart. Guarantee it.
All right.
And then spray the whole thing
with aluminum paint.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
See ya.
Bye.
Good luck.
The approved paint of transmission rebuilders
everywhere.
Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy, Frogman Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Reykjavik, Bisquick, Extra Thick, Fish Stick, Marshmallow Chick, and Salt Lick Picnic, Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Novera. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our director of roadway resurfacing is Sylvia Potholi. Our staff acupuncturist is O. Howard Hertz. And our shop foreman is Luke Busy. Our student consultant is Norm DePlume. Our dermatologist for teenagers is Don Pickett. Our emergency room physician is Henrietta Badclam. The Car Talk musical director is Donna E. Mobile. Our divorce attorney is Carmine Not Yours. Our coordinator of summer visits to the in-laws is Don Juan Go. Our Russian chauffeur is Pikoff and Dropoff, and our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the Trustafarians in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click & Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1930, subscribe to our weekly podcast, and check out our family alienating, clothing, and best of collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, Are you looking for a good mechanic? Well, you could go down to the marina and see who has the biggest boat, or you can check out reviews of mechanics that other Car Talk listeners use and like at our mechanics files. You can search by zip code, specialty, or number of bunks in the guy's cabin cruiser. Check out the mechanics files anytime over at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey Cheatham and Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though NPR listeners everywhere turn their tote bags inside out whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.